Rocking chair sessions. With Elisa Di Battista, Maria Teresa Barber.
Hello, everyone.
And Deja Vu, it's RCS Rocking Chair Sessions, Volume 109 with artist Caesar Santos. Welcome, Caesar, again.
Hello.
Welcome back. So today we had a little sound check, 1 or 2 minutes, right? And we are now starting the session with a little story about you boxing as a kid. So please.
what a trip it was, because I used to love to draw. And I would, every time there was a conflict outside as a kid, I would go in that room and do my own things. And my father, one day he saw me that I was trying to hide away from a fight. And he carried me physically outside and said, "Who hit him?" And then people started pointing at the guy. And he's like, "It was me." He's like, "Fight with him right now." And I was like, "No." And I had to fight. Of course, I lost a bunch of punches in my face in front of my dad, in front of everybody. It was ridiculous. And he said, "You're going to take boxing classes from now on." And that gave me a confidence. I'm kind of glad that he did that. Even though it looks brutal from now, like looking at it, especially our times. But in Cuba, it was a different situation. And he was training me to not be weak and not hide away, because we didn't have the space that we have in here. Mm-hmm. And I think he was just trying to, you know, protect me in a way.
Yeah.
And I'm glad he did. It was tough, but it was good for the rest of my life. Yeah, he helped out.
He taught you like a survival skill. That's really important for the rest of your life. Like,
yes.
And I feel like, I don't know if artists sometimes, I know that I sometimes definitely do that, instead of like having a confrontation, I go in my studio and make a painting out of it, you know, in a way.
That's what it is, yeah. That's what art is. It's expressing all those things that you feel intimate. You don't have to kind of fight the world. You just paint it away.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, I think you mentioned you have an older sibling. So the fact that you have an older sibling and she is a girl, like your dad's not going to take your younger sibling or your older sibling and put her on the street as a girl to fight with other girls. It's more like you're the boy and you're the macho, and you have to, like, there's like these social roles, I think.
Yes, especially in the culture. Up,
then you have to defend yourself, defend your family, protect, and you can't run away if you're protecting somebody.
Well, that is true. You know, he probably didn't do that with your sister, right?
Oh, no. He would treat them, her differently. Mm-hmm. Everybody would be treated as what the role was supposed to be, I guess.
Traditional, socialized.
Yeah. Even though she came pretty late one day, and that's the only time I saw my father kind of hit her a little bit, because it was kind of late and we didn't know what she was. That's the only time I saw my parents being aggressive towards her.
Cell phones, no beepers, right?
You start screaming her name, like, where is she? You know, she's kind of 7, you know, something like that.
But she didn't get to go do boxing classes, right? That was not...
No, that was not an option.
That's interesting, too. I've been thinking about taking boxing classes. I think it would be good. It's good for girls, too, because it's not that you're supposed to hit people, but just this idea, like you say, like about not shying away from a confrontation, right?
I wouldn't recommend that for that reason. I think it would be better to do it as a training and more as
a mental exercise.
Yeah, to get kind of like a healthy mindset,
like
release some stress and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think because the situation is different. I think if there is an aggressive male, you don't want to confront him.
Because
the upper body strength and stuff like that, I don't think is convenient. You can carry a weapon. That's be much better. So just as long as you have a nice 9mm in your pocket, you don't need to train boxing.
Or pepper spray or some kind of phenol number 5 that's in their eyes.
Faster options.
Car, run them over.
A 9mm. Okay. I'm a little bit thinking about that.
Is this a conversation about art?
I think it all relates eventually. Let's talk about art. When you got here, you showed us, I really find them to be like historical objects and really quite beautiful and personal, which are sketchbooks. And you showed us your sketchbook, and you could see that it had character and it had pages coming out of it. And you opened it up, and the first person on the front cover of your sketchbook was none other than our volume 108, Miss Karen Rafis. And you told us that she used to be your teacher. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I was listening to that episode, And I said, I'm going to bring it there to show it. But, well, that was my first class at the New World School of the Arts. I graduated from DASH, Design and Architecture Senior High, studying architecture, design, and art. And then I got a scholarship to the New World School of the Arts.
Awesome.
And that's when I got into her class. And it was very conceptual. It was warp. And yeah, it was about research. And I remember I was, you know, talking and, you know, being from Cuba, still with a big accent, you know. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to draw this caricature. I love drawing people. I love expressions. And yeah, it was a fun match that she was just in my, you know, before me here. So, yeah.
The teacher, now
the
student.
Did you tell the gesture that she did?
Oh, her, the image is, or the caricature is, of Karen with her finger over her mouth, and she's shushing Caesar because apparently he was talking in class.
During class.
So he drew a caricature of her shushing him in class, which I think is just really amazing.
This is the year 2000.
We're going to send her that picture so Karen can have a look at it.
19 years old drawing. I remember.
That's amazing. Eventually, did your dad, once you learned how to defend yourself boxing, appreciate that you'd like to draw and stuff? Did they?
Yes, they always supported me. I had an uncle, my uncle in Cuba, he's still alive, but he's older. He's not painting as much, but he's in the National Museum in Cuba.
Wow.
The permanent collection, and he's been around. So they knew
that
the career of art,
mm-hmm.
even though it looked like a strange thing to do in Cuba. I mean, even here, it's not normal to have a career as an artist mm-hmm. in a successful way. Mm-hmm. Even though everybody sees a drawing and say, oh, my, you know, so-and-so knows how to paint too. That's a common thing, but not a common thing to have a career by itself and be successful. So they did have a reference. So it wasn't as alien to them. But then when we got here, I was 12 years old, he saw the situation was different and they supported me more with my art. And actually he told me, don't box. And I wanted to keep boxing because I did
no
it for
way.
A couple of years before getting here. So that's something I was comfortable with. And he said, no, the situation here is different. You need a career. You need to get serious. Stop boxing. And I'm like, wow, you know? So it was actually learning that showed me that his intention was good. It was not for me to fight. It was for me to adapt to the environment that I was growing up, mm-hmm. not knowing if I was ever going to be in a safe place that I don't need to then fight mm-hmm. physically or impose, you know. Mm-hmm. In 2008, I kind of recovered the boxing because I was living in Sweden. I was teaching at an academy, classical drawing, and I was so bored there. And I remember going to a gym and started training and went and competed in a European championship. And I won gold medal in boxing.
No way.
We're yes. sitting before a gold medal. That's amazing.
Well, it was a smaller championship. But,
a medal's
yeah.
a medal.
Yeah.
And it was a whole deal with like the big gloves and
yeah.
like the
wow.
ring and everything.
Yeah.
That's so neat.
It was pretty
fun. You have like this
fun.
Whole second
yeah,
career
my,
in
well,
life.
You can see my...
You got your nose broken?
Yeah, my broken nose and some trophies like that I have.
That's wow. phenomenal.
That was an experience. I always wanted to do it because there was something about it that if you don't finish it, you
leaving
kind of
it behind.
Train, you know, and I'm
yeah.
like, I need to find out what will be to actually do it for
if
real.
If you had it in you. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But then after five fights, I was, I won five, my first fights, I won them all, there were
wow.
five.
So you're 5-0.
5-0, oh, retired.
I would put that on you, my friend.
Yeah, everybody was making fun of me, like, wow, you retired.
I'm
at the top of your game.
But I didn't like even the victory of it because I was, my face was so in pain and I didn't get fulfillment from it. And I said, I'm gonna stop doing this. And you couldn't do it part-time, you know. You either box 100% or paint 100%. You cannot do both. Badly, you know, I realized that. So I said, my career is in the arts and I'm just gonna experience this for a few months and go back to my art.
So when you were training for these fights, you were full-time, like, I don't know, 8 hours a day, you
Pretty
were full
much.
Training.
Yeah, I was just teaching and then that's it. Everything else was running at 4 a.m. in the freezing cold in Sweden. The competition was in October. At that time, it was already pretty cold over there. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty, I gave it my all. And that's how I was able to win because mm-hmm. it's all about training, running
yeah.
and, you know, doing a lot of that. But I didn't have the heart of the boxer. I wasn't aggressive enough. I mean, I was aggressive fighting, but not, I didn't
You don't
like,
have the crazy genes.
Yeah, I was like, why am I doing this?
I'm just saying that boxers are crazy, but you know, the extra
little bit, you have to have a like, wild, you know,
a little bit savagery.
It's a lot about the passion that you have, you know. I think like for some people, boxing can mean as much as for us art means, you know.
Totally.
People could tell us that we are crazy for like why do we spend so much money and time and with not a lot of, you know, prospects. Mm-hmm. You could say the same thing about being an artist, but I think it's like, I think every person has like this
their own thing,
purpose in life, you know, and for some people it is boxing and that is what they crave and what's...
Once you don't care about the punches, because that's the most thing that superficially it feels like that's the most hard thing to do, but training is the hardest thing to do.
Yeah.
Because then you get punched and it's more like a dance. It's more like once you're there, you don't feel that. You know, it's for the viewer to feel the impact, but for the fighters, they're more thinking and strategies and what is he doing, what should I do next. You're thinking about more about sports.
Yeah.
So it doesn't feel as brutal once you're in it. It's like a beautiful thing in a way.
Yeah.
At 12, when you got here, what was Miami like? What was the art scene that you remember? I think at 12, you don't drive yourself, so it's probably a little bit harder to see or experience the art scene. But what was it for you as coming here to the States?
Well, for me, I started in middle school, and the teacher, I was in Hialeah living with my family, you know, from Cuba. That was kind of like a safe area to live. And we were put there, and my teacher from middle school, when I was about to go to high school, she said, you are so passionate about art, you shouldn't go to a regular high school. And then she gave me the direction, like the where to go, written in a paper, show your parents, go to either New World High School or Dash. And I applied to the New World School of the Arts and they didn't accept me because I didn't have a portfolio ready. I didn't even know what it was. And then, but since I failed, we went and asked why and they gave us other things. So then I applied to Dash more prepared. And then I was accepted at Dash.
Nice.
And that's how then I got back to New World College.
Mm-hmm. Eventually.
Yeah, so that was pretty much the whole thing about me. And even at Dash, they said, there's no sports here. You're committed to the arts. This is what it's going to be. And then we had like extra hours. So it's a magnet school, so you don't leave as early as the other kids. But for me, it was fine because I was in this country and the whole mentality was you have to succeed in whatever you do because we didn't come here for no reason. We are leaving our country by force kind of thing. Yeah, so let's not take this for granted and do our best. So then I took my career as an artist with everything, with a passion, with like cleverness to figure it out how to make it.
Pushing forward.
Mm-hmm. How did you learn to, you know, for example, when you're talking about your career and early on you had this drive, where did you get the support and the information that you needed to kind of, you know, follow that dream? Like, who was supporting you, not just like teaching you how to paint, but then also like all the, we were just talking about how much it is also like the business aspects of it, you know?
Well, yeah. I was trying so many things at that time because I was very creative. So I was studying music and I was in theater and I realized that I didn't get as many compliments when I was drawing. So every time I drew something or I did something on a flat surface, people were more impressed than the rest. So I guess that molded me and guided me through fine arts instead of theater or something else that I was trying as well.
Because you did a theater too. You took classes and you also performed, right?
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, I was in a couple of commercials or soap operas and theater appearances and festivals. But I didn't like rehearsing, you know? It was a lot of rehearsal for the show and it was a lot of breathing. And I didn't like either the group activity thing. You have to depend on for music, you have to depend on everybody else, for everything else. Mm-hmm. For art, it was just myself in my space.
Depend on you.
And I said, I think I like this more. I can just be my show. Mm-hmm. And then I communicate with other people. And then, of course, we all need other people. Mm-hmm. But in the creative process, I was more independent than the rest I felt. So I talked to my parents, and that's when, you know, I developed in 4 years in college in New World. But then I dropped out before graduating.
Just how did like your parents feel about that?
That was bad. My father especially was like, I can't believe you spent all this energy in that and you're dropping out. But my plan was not to drop out to change. It was to drop out for the opportunity to study in Italy, the old master techniques that I always wanted to do it, to do that. So I said, listen, the diploma doesn't really matter for me and for the world. I don't see any artist being just presenting their degrees. I mean, the ones that have it, they say it because that's what, you know, they have it. But if you don't have it, you show something else that you have, you know, whatever strength you have, that's the one you show.
Yeah.
So I thought that being in Miami, I always wanted to create. My uncle, the abstract artist, successful painter in Cuba, always told me, add something new to the to whatever is going on in the art world. Try not to repeat. And for me, being trained as a, with art theory and art history after the Impressionists, I thought that the and my passion being figurative, I said, what if I go back and apply those things that happen that develop in 500 years and we don't think about it anymore? We see it as, oh, geniuses and period. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what if I start being passionate about that and this rediscover it and bring it to my generation? And I and that was my mission ever since. That was my mission.
And that is, so you went to Florence, right, in Italy, to study
To study classical art, you know, pretty much 19th century academy kind
classical.
Of style. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you know of the school or the program you wanted to apply to, or did you more or less like buy a ticket, pack your bags, show up at the airport and think like, what do I do now? Or did you have a little bit more of a...
Yeah, there was a specific school that I didn't even know because we didn't have a computer in my house at that time. And I was in college already, my fourth year, and I was learning how to do Photoshop. That was the only program I got to use. The other stuff I had to drop out because I had no idea how to even start a computer. So I would go to the library and look at books and study from books. And one guy saw me one day with my sketchbook and he said, oh, you like this type of art? You should go to the Angel Academy in Florence. And he took me to the computer, put the website in, and showed me the stuff. So I wrote everything down, went to my house, and started corresponding with mail, like regular mail, with the school. And I got accepted.
That's amazing.
And then I said, okay, of course I'm dropping out because that was my opportunity to do it. And then, but it took me a year, actually. It sounds so fast like this.
No, it always sounds fast.
But it took me
fast.
A year to convince my parents because we didn't have money. And so they had to sell, they supported me enough. They sold the house and they got the profits and gave it to me. And my mom got two jobs. My father is a mechanic. And then with that, they supported me through the school there.
My God.
And actually, all that situation would look like, that would look like a disadvantage, but it actually gave me such a push that I finished in record. A four-year degree, I did it in a year and a half. So I kind of opened other students' mind to say, listen, you don't have to conform to what they expect from people. You can just break that. It's that the 4-minute mile type of thing. Once one ran it, then everybody else was able to do it.
So basically, the regular time would have been 4 years, and you did all the classes in a year and a half. Or is it more like you have to learn techniques and then you get advanced?
It was by projects, so they will give you a check once you finish a certain project. So it's supposed to be the first year you do pencil work to develop, to know what you know, black and gray and develop, you know, light and form and stuff like that without using oil or any other difficult medium. But if I did that, I get the key to the school, and I was supposed to clean by with that key, open it, but I would go and do an advance on the projects. So I was able to go faster like that.
Wow.
And then I did the charcoal and then black and white and then full color palette. And I was able to graduate. And that's when I graduated from there, which actually doesn't even matter because it's a private, small academy. It was only 12 students at the time around there. And that diploma I have, and it didn't matter. So the one that mattered, I never got. But
well,
I guess,
I mean, you never know.
Was Salvador Zarate in the same school?
I believe he went there for a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I think there is.
Oh, Salvador. Yes, of course.
You know Salvador?
Oh, of course, yes.
Were you there at the same time?
No, he went
he
after.
Later.
Yes.
Yeah,
nice people.
So how did you deal with that pressure that like your parents sold a house for you to be able to do that? How did you deal with that pressure?
And that house was actually also bought from help from with people. So we actually had a kind of like a conflict with family because they were saying, I can't believe you're doing that. You're trusting your kid to do that. He's probably going to party, have fun, and study art, whatever that is. So people from outside are new, like four people in our family, my mom, my dad, and my sister.
Everybody has an opinion.
Everybody else had no idea.
What is it with Latin people? Everybody has an opinion. I'm serious.
Yeah, they wanted to get involved in my career. But I guess I was just saying, that pushed me. That pushed me because I felt the responsibility.
Yeah.
And I wanted to prove everybody wrong, whoever doubted it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, it played, you know, worked out very well. So I got them a very nice house now.
Aww,
so
that's amazing. It's incredible.
It's good. It's a good story.
Oh my God. Wow. So you did all this work in Florence. You did a year and a half of like intense work. And then what did you do after that?
As soon as I graduated, I came back and told my parents, listen, give me 3 months at least, maximum, to develop a series of work, and I will start working with a gallery and making money, I promise. And because that's one of the promises of the school too. They say, we don't BS here. Whenever you finish this, you have a foundation to be a professional painter. And now the creativity part is up to you, but with the skills, you can do it. And I said, man, I've been pretty creative all my life. If I get the skills plus that, make it happen. And that's what happened. I did. I created a series of work, and I waited and applied to one of the galleries in Coral Gables, Cernuda, and got there. He liked my work. I got lucky. And from like, right from the start, I was able to go to art fairs and, you know, show and have portrait commissions and start making a good living as a painter.
That's incredible.
Pretty good. Yeah, it was intense, you know, because I had to also agree to lower percentages and stuff like that I even agreed to and proposed in order to be accepted there. Because for me, what I wanted to do is to live the life of the artist. For me, the money wasn't enough. If I was making enough to keep creating, I would give everything else to everybody. I would donate a painting, I would give it, I would do whatever. And I would talk to artists and they would complain about 50%. And I'm like, man, if you would know, because it was a secret, but I'm like, you don't even know. But I knew that I had nothing else for me. I knew that he had a whole career selling art, and I needed, for me, it was another schooling kind of thing where I was getting paid. And
you were learning about the business.
The math worked for me, so I was little by little. Mm-hmm. And that was in 2006 that I started selling my paintings after graduating. So it worked out.
What would you tell someone that is like at the start, that is in your shoes back then? You know, what would you tell them? What is important to look for, or would you just say like whatever opportunity you have to get in and start, or
how? In a way, I think that now things are easier in certain ways because we have more information, everybody's more connected. But at the same time, because of that, things are becoming more difficult because we want things fast and we don't want to go through the process of finding things out. We want to get it now and we want to research it. And at that time, I realized that looking for the information and waiting was what made you stronger. Mm-hmm. And I don't, so I would tell people to first trust their guts and not listen to any superior advice, because nobody knows exactly what's going on inside of you. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to me, because I was kind of ridiculed a little bit at the New World School of the Arts. I was not their, you know, like a good kind of student to follow, because I was, at that time I was immature and I was a little against the conceptual art idea.
Which is okay, because my point is like, no matter what kind of art you're attracted to, I think you should find a professor or person who is, like you say, a mentor who supports whatever you're interested in. Maybe you're interested in caricatures. That's fine. I've gone to schools where they're like, refuse illustration, refuse caricatures. But if that's what you're into, cool. And you were a classical artist. You wanted to do classical painting, and for nobody to embrace and be like, wow, you're amazing. I think the school you went to is the four-year university that would have been the equivalent here. I mean, even though it's not New World or whatever other recognizable thing, like, it's phenomenal. It's a school in Italy where, you know.
Yes. And one of my teachers from Dash told me, I think you're too concerned if people like your images or not. Don't listen, don't care, don't worry about what people like or not. And I said, well, that counts with you too. So I'm not going to even listen to you either. So I'm going to find that out by myself. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to go back, you know, in the sense I just wanted to recreate the love for the craftsmanship. And I wanted to learn how to use oils like the masters did, but to apply it in a different way. It's not, you know, it was not to repeat it. It was just to apply it in a different way. And I thought Miami was the place to do it too, because it's so out of it. Like, we don't have a nice, good museum with classical reference. And I said, you know, if I bring it now, I'll be more contemporary, because that's what the whole thing is about. It's about proposing new ways of approach and application and ideas. So, Yeah, it was a nice project.
When you went to Sweden, because you mentioned how you came back and obviously you showed your parents, like, I didn't just run away. Look at me. I'm going to represent. I'm going to, I guess, maybe some, like, not submit, but like give back what you guys gave me. And you eventually went to Sweden. Did you decide not to leave Miami permanently, or do you just wanted to explore the world a little bit? What is it that brought you back here?
I left to Sweden, and I also left to New York for 2.5 years. And the reason I left is because after school is over, I felt that I needed to be connected to museums and old masters in order to develop better. Because once you are isolated from that, you know, I would lose that touch. And I felt that my technique was getting worse than what I was doing in Italy because of my teachers looking over my shoulders and helping me. And little by little, my technique was suffering. And I realized that if I would go and teach it, I would refresh it. And if I would go to museums, that would also give me a strength. Mm-hmm. And then I would come back to Miami because I love the idea of developing in Miami. I don't know. Every time I come back to Miami, new things showed up, new restaurants. I love that. You know, other places are set. Miami is, well, that's why they call it the Magic City, because people who retire, I mean, or every year they will come in the winter, they will find out how different the city got.
It's a brand new city, like basically every year, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it has something that grabs me, even though it doesn't have the atmosphere of the classical mm-hmm. thing, but it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's within, you know.
Mm-hmm. It always changes. Through this series, you've started to develop. How do you feel that each one, because I noticed you have on your website, for example, on paper, and then mm-hmm. you have like the first series, which is like your breakout series, touching a little bit on the old and then the new, and then you have like another series after that. What has been different for each of those series, or how have you developed and grown?
Well, I've been in my research is about how to apply it, how to apply these techniques, right? And then I love portraiture, so that's, you know, part of my series is what problem do I want to get involved with? Do I get involved with composition or with like individuals? And so now I'm developing a sketchbook series where I am starting to create in the pages, just as back in New World idea or like back in a Dash type of sketchbook, but develop it with the strength. I mean, as much as I can in technical strength and expression, and see how I can present that. So in a way, I feel like a performance artist, or like, it's kind of conceptual, because it's I'm trying to rescue that romantic sense of loving just four basic colors. Now my palette just consists of black, white, yellow, and red. And with that, they call it the Sorn palette. It was a Swedish artist, actually. And with that, you can create the illusion of many, many colors. Yeah, for me, I get into something and then I get bored really quickly of each series. Like after a year and a half, I'm like, okay, next. So let's see, I don't know.
I think it's good. You don't want to crank out the same thing over and over again. Like you do see, there's also, I think, a joy in the figure that I see when you bring. Not only is it super realistic looking, it almost looks like a photograph, but the insertion of you or the changing of the roles. For example, there was like the scene of like the garden, and instead of being the woman gaze, it was like the male who was like nude, and then the ladies were like dressed and with a cigar, and they were like looking at the guy at the park who was nude. And
well, that series was called Syncretism, and I used it to say, it was silly how I saw contemporary art rejecting classical art in a way. So since I found myself in the middle of both worlds, having friends, contemporary friends telling me, oh, you're old-fashioned, and the old-fashioned guys be like, oh, don't go to Miami, it's too contemporary. And I said, let me mix this stuff up in paintings. And at the same time, I keep training. So it was a fun series, yeah.
When did you feel that you wanted, I see you did a self-portrait of yourself, almost like we used a preview with Salvador and his self-portrait, but insertion of you in a painting, almost like Rembrandt at the Masters used to do. How do you feel about putting you in, like you become the subject?
Yeah, well, I see it as a play of light and shadows. And sometimes if you don't have a model, that you can just get in front of a mirror.
You're free.
And observe that. So yeah, beyond, even though when, at the end people look at it and they recognize it's me, the process wasn't just, I'm going to do me. It's more of how do I play with the composition to create a time that I'm living and record part of that. Kind of like what Rembrandt felt. And yeah, it's a weird feeling because it's hard to explain, you know, because at the end it looks literal, but the process was totally abstract. How do you create the sense of space with a value, or, you know, the sense of expression with the touch of like increasing the red or whatever? So Yeah, it's a very kind of intimate thing.
No, and I also appreciate seeing these master paintings you study in art history, and you're like, wait, that's not the original. It's the recreation of the original in modern times with another twist to it. But then I'm like, wow, like the remake of the original was so masterfully done that you're like, wow, like you could, like, yeah, it takes experience. And if it's in a museum, the original, and yours is like almost as close as to the original. It's like, damn, you got skills, boy. It's like really good.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. I mean, even every art is a reflection of another artist. I think what inspires me is art. So I think the beginning of an artist is art. And then that, so even in contemporary art, you see that a lot, and you get inspired by other people's voices and, you know, how they, you know, the ideas, whatever. So I was like, what if I go back a little further and do that and see what happens? And then I started my YouTube channel talking about it.
Yeah.
And I was going to say it in a way, because what happened was that at the Angel Academy where I studied, the language was very traditional and the way they presented it. And then when I saw artists expressing that, even living professional artists, they would have like that classical poetry about it. And I'm like, you know what? I need to talk to skateboard guys. You know, I want to talk to my generation, young guys, and let them know that this is fun too. You can find beauty in this, because I felt it. So in case someone else felt what I felt, I can say, it's okay, do it. Because I didn't get the support from my teachers in that sense. So that's good about social media nowadays, that you can search and go past the elite or the establishment saying what should be done. And I said, this is gonna be a cool project. And actually the YouTube were super successful. I got like 4 million views in less than 2 years. It was pretty good. I'm like, who cares about this art? That's crazy.
That's amazing.
It was fun, yeah.
Do you get requests, or is that like a project that you also got kind of bored of, or it's something you try to maintain?
Well, I stopped it for a little bit. Actually, it's been a couple of months that I don't post any videos, because I'm developing a website where I can, so I'm kind of rethinking the concept, but I will be back doing it because I enjoyed it and I saw how, you know, people appreciate it. And mm-hmm. that's part of art. For me, art was not to be isolated and kind of be by myself. Okay. I wanted to influence culture and see how I can push it and play with people. Since I'm always alone by myself in the studio, I'm like, might mm-hmm. as well have a connection to the outside world.
Connect. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think what, coming back to the self-portraits, I think what's also really interesting with, I mean, for example, Rembrandt also, is that you're also documenting yourself as an artist over time, right? So it's kind of like you can see not just your skills, but also how you see yourself, which is,
change.
I feel always like it's much harder to do a self-portrait, because to see yourself like you are is so much harder than to see another person like they are, for me.
Yes,
I don't know
yes,
if
yes.
it's the same for you.
No,
I
totally.
Mean,
we never see ourselves. Even yeah. even in the mirror, it's not really the right angle. Like,
yeah.
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, when people, I know that I don't know who I am. Like,
yeah.
and that, well, that's the goal. But yeah, so a self-portrait is like, are people seeing what I'm seeing here, you know?
Because you kind of have to forget that it's you that you're painting in order to be doing a good job,
yes,
right?
Yes,
otherwise,
yes.
it's like, it's not going to work. It's like this.
Yeah, I just have the feeling, and then I just look at a bunch of colors and forms, and then it comes out like me, but then hopefully it shows a little bit of what I was feeling.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that is.
You
that
have
is.
To disguise your brain and forget mm-hmm. what, forget how to traditionally see. Wasn't it, who was it that, who said that? Was it Da Vinci, that you have to learn how to see or something? Learning how to see the light in order to
yeah.
do it correctly. I wanted to ask you a question about the series you made, because it's part traditional and part like super modern slash skateboard. Like, you already has like that flavor of like not millennial, but like, you know, more modern. They're figures, but then it has like this neon glow or these shapes, like crayons and
mm-hmm.
circling around them. How did that, because it almost looks computer like animated, but it's I'm you're a painter, so I know that it's a painting. How did that kind of like composition slash mash up occur?
Well, I did that started with the two portraits I did of my parents, and then I looked at them and they were like, you know, I painted my parents, my mom in the laundry with laundry, and then my father welder with the welding machine, and then I said, man, this is too dry, this is too professional. Let me play, I'm the kid, let me vandalize this two portraits with my left hand with a crayon and just do it. And for me, and I went and I did that, and then aesthetically it kind of looked cool because it was like the best I could do and the worst I could do, you know, like together. And so in a way it reflected the syncretism series but more personal. And then I just started painting portraits and adding the feeling that I wanted to, that each person gave me. I would add my left hand and let it go with a crayon and vandalize it or interact with it. And that's how it developed.
Which is so funny because I felt like it was like a mashup of the classical with Basquiat almost. Yeah. Like it has like that innate, like primal, just like gestural, just drawing and doing whatever it is you feel with whatever is in front of you. And that's like, I got the experience of both like this care, this kind of like focus and this like sharp, need to be like very controlled and display everything with the light, and then there's just like complete like loss of control. So you had like both of them in one.
Yes,
frame,
I'm glad that you said that because yeah, it was interesting, and I had to I showed it in Miami with Holman Ortega Gallery, and it was pretty interesting to see people saying, "What is this? Is that was a printing?" Like people didn't understand if I printed and then did it. You know?
Yeah,
like,
it looked layered. It was really quite beautiful.
They probably couldn't believe that you actually
did like, both.
Why would you do that?
Spend all this time on the painting and then just like went like there.
Yeah, but it's part of the game. It's part of finding out stuff, and it's all about aesthetics and how to break it and finding out, you know, more about yourself while doing it. So yeah, no, it was a fun series. But then I get bored again. I'm like, it's too, I don't know, it was too obvious after a while, and I didn't want to become, you know,
repetitive.
Yeah, repetitive with that aesthetically at least. And then I just moved on to something else. Yeah, it's weird.
Is the new sketchbook series you're working on, the one that you can see, it's like a very limited palette and you can see the colors on the side?
Yes.
How large is your sketchbook?
I have it here. I can show
Ooh,
you after.
Or like whatever. That'll be great.
But yeah, just 9x12.
Okay, so it's not like a large one. It's just like petite.
Yeah, small. When I photograph it, you know, on Instagram or social media, you show a picture and it doesn't matter if the painting is huge or small.
It's always
the same square, you know? So it's funny. We have to kind of keep forcing ourselves to not be influenced by that format, because a lot of artists are actually creating for social media because they know how it looks and whatever. So that could be... Even though you're influenced by everything, you know, and there's a reason why people did trompe l'oeil back then, and there's a reason why people painted big or small at different times. So we kind of have to be sensitive to our time, but at the same time, not be completely, you know, run by it and dominate it.
I think that's a good observation.
You don't want to be too controlled, but then it's also like... I mean, a lot of our artists also here at the Bakehouse sell their work through social media, you know? So it's kind of like, you do have to think about how can I represent it there,
of course,
you know, to be able to make a living again and work with the help of social media. So it's kind of like this, it has to be a balancing act too,
yes,
right?
Well, the social media put that freedom into the artists that they don't belong to the overpowering of the galleries.
Yeah.
Just like if they would kick you out, some people would lose their careers because then that meant a lot. Oh, if they didn't get him, what does it mean? So everybody else was afraid of that. And that's horrible because then you depend on one person for your career.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that that happened. You can create your freedom, connect to the free world and express yourself from there. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you document your own work?
Yes.
Where did you learn that?
Well, I mean, kind of. You mean as in recording it?
Like photography? The lighting
Well, I mean, the New World, we learned a lot of stuff, and then we took photography.
You did learn Photoshop?
Yeah, photography. Even though it was, and now with, you can just search everything and learn how to put the filters and make sure that there's no glare. Even though it's pretty difficult because my type of art, once you finish it, is good to varnish it with a gloss. And so that all the paints is saturated and the values are correct and all this stuff. So photographing it is difficult. But I'm not the type of artist that is too specific that it has to be like the art. It's like I said, it has to be good for Instagram. Then when they see it in person, they could be like, oh, wow, it's a little different or it's better or whatever. And so, yeah, but I do record it. I put it, you know, date and everything, save it.
When you do your paintings, on the back, do you write like the colors you used and... the combinations for archival?
That's a cigarette. No,
because I'm thinking that. No, I have friends that do, Lucinda does it as well. Or, not archivability, but sometimes you have to go restoration of paintings and stuff, and sometimes they recommend the back for you to write the pigments you used or varnishes and stuff of that nature in order for if somebody has to go back and touch stuff up. Yeah, I had a friend who used to work for Boston.
And that happened to me. I went to a collector's house and I saw an old painting of mine. And I'm like, what did I use for this color? I don't remember.
You didn't remember.
I didn't know what to look at. So that'll be a good idea.
Start writing down what you use.
I have one question about your time in Europe. How was it for you? So you came from Cuba to Miami. You experienced Miami. You went to New York, right? Before you went to Stockholm. Or was Stockholm before?
Before Stockholm, then New York.
Then New York.
Yeah.
So how was that? Well, you were in Italy too before. So it's not like you weren't in Europe
Italian?
Before.
Yes, and I'm married to an Italian woman.
That's amazing. Did you meet her there?
I met her the first week I was there.
I had a feeling that I was like, Italian girl was on my mind.
A Cuban guy in Florence meets an Italian woman for sure.
Right?
That's an incredible story.
So what did your parents say to that?
Actually, it's funny because I came back without any idea that I was going to continue. We actually broke up. Uh-huh. And I came back and I kept telling my parents, man, this woman, I keep thinking of her. And then my father one day, he was like, okay, let's get a beer together. And we went to the balcony of their apartment because actually they sold the house to move to a small apartment in the Northwest. And we were there in the balcony and he said, why don't you have her here? I'm like, well, she doesn't know English very well. I don't even know how to do her paperwork and all this stuff. It's too much work. And he's like, if that's your concern, bring her here. If that's the only thing you're worried about. And then so I said, yeah, I called her and I said, you want to try Miami and see what it is? She's like, yeah, let's check it out. I have a visa for 3 months. So within those 3 months, we got married.
Aww.
So it's been 12 years.
That's amazing.
Incredible. I had a feeling. I didn't ask, but I was like, are you telling, girl? But so when you went back to Europe to go to teach in Stockholm, how was that experience for you? Because it was like, first you were like a student, right? And you were focusing on, and then it's Florence and Italy, but then Stockholm is very different. So
very different.
How was that for you?
Well, I was teaching. So for me, the culture, I got to meet people from there. And I was just like I couldn't figure it out exactly. But I learned so much because it gave me like the discipline and the seriousness of stuff. Because, the Cuban culture is very late all the time. And we make too many jokes sometimes and insult people without thinking. And now they were the opposite. They were like politically correct. And you got to be careful what you say stuff. And I was never conscious of that side of humanity. I'm like, really? We have to think before we say stuff? So then I learned a little bit. About that and being early and stuff, because after 7 minutes they leave. If you're late 7 minutes, that's too late.
Yeah.
Forget the Cuban time being an hour and out being late for an hour, half an hour or an hour and a half.
And even in Miami, it's like Miami I come time. From Austria, and it's for me like experiencing Miami is probably like the opposite of what you experienced.
Yeah, actually, I made more friends in my gym boxing with immigrants that were there because most boxers were from different countries.
Yeah.
So I actually related more to other countries than Swedish, the culture.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's very different. I think it's.
But it's good. That's the purpose of traveling,
right?
To get involved with that and learn and see what do they have good that I can apply, Yeah.
But also I think that they appreciate, first of all, they hired you as a teacher because of the skills that you had, but also they that university appreciated the classical and the traditional versus sometimes some schools, like you say, they're like, oh, that's so whatever, passé, and that's in the past. But I think it's important to look back to then and look forward and reinvent. Like, how can you,
Yeah, and for me, it was important to also make a living. Like, I not only because I was following my passion and I was lucky that my passion was something that could be monetized. And so I had that going. But imagine how difficult it will be to depend on a gallery or a curator to pick you. And then you have to maybe teach for the rest of your life or something like that because you cannot make it in the free market because some people are deciding that you belong to one show a year, that would be even good.
Not even two years, right?
Whatever, if you're lucky, whatever. But yeah, but the idea was that how do you actually make a good living from that? And in my mind was focused on that the whole time. I couldn't dream too big for the reality of making a living. Mm-hmm. So I had to match both. And now the funny part is that as soon as I started making money, the first thing I did was go to wealthy people and ask them how to keep the money and make it grow. So then I got some advices, and then I said, let's sacrifice my beginning to get comfortable and invest and do stuff so that then I could be free later than being too free early on because I'm young and wild and then having to depend on having to then structure myself to make a living. So it worked out because I asked people with money to give me like advice. Mm-hmm. And So
even wise at an early age, you're like, yeah, because I think most people, you say they go and they would have partied in Italy and like you were serious.
Yeah, or buy new cars and stuff like that, you know? Like my first check, I went to the guy and said, listen, I want to be a collector too. And this is my first painting. What should I do with this check? And then he's like, well, do you have a car? I'm like, no, I live in my parents' house. He's like, okay, buy a car with half of it. I'm like, yeah, but it's 3,000. He's like, well, get $1,500 and buy a car. My father's a mechanic, so I'm good. He's like, all you need is to move from point A to point B to do something bigger. The car shouldn't be the main thing. The main thing should be the where you're going and the purpose. Mm-hmm. And then it was very helpful to see the world like that and be like stingy. Yeah. And he said, every dollar you spend, make sure it keeps its value. So food is good because otherwise you die. What else, you know? And every time you buy something, it has to have that value and keep it forever. And that's the mentality. And I was like, wow, that makes sense. And then, you know, so. But then I had a good wife that agreed. And they said, this is a good project, you know. She's from Genoa. So they said, they're good. They know how to
have money.
Yeah,
they know how to save money.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was good because, you know, in Miami, so many temptations to get broke.
Yeah, okay, well, Maria just gave me
especially
that.
Miami. I mean, you can party all year round, all the time, and throw money out the window, like...
Tempting,
no,
yeah.
Tomorrow.
I think it's a kind of classical, but important thing to also realize that saving is... I mean, yes, granted, people are like, YOLO, you only live once, but it's also like, well, you also have to live, so it's good to invest in...
Well, you die once. You live every day.
That too as well. You just came back from Italy. Do you have any residencies or projects or things that you'd like to share with us, like the sketchbook project or things like that? We have, I think, 4 minutes left for you to platform.
Well, just quickly, the idea with Italy is that I put myself in the position to teach once a year a workshop, and I go to Italy and teach it there. That way I finish at 4 and I go to museums and refresh, you know, get my sketchbook there, write notes, think about stuff, and kind of get that inspiration again to come back to real life and see how I can apply that and twist it and stuff like that. And because I get so many requests to teach in person, but I don't think it's the way to do it nowadays. Like I can present it via, you know, digital social media, stuff like that. But it's good sometimes to have that person to person contact and talk about art. So that's why I go there, also to visit my family, my wife's family. So that's one of my projects every year, to go mm-hmm. to Italy. But yeah.
Are they happy that she married an artist?
I hope so. I remember when I met her, I said, "What would be your dream man?" And she's like, "Oh, I want to marry like a poet or someone like creative like that." I'm like, "Man, I have to step out. I have to do something with the art to make it."
No pressure.
No pressure at all. That's amazing.
Okay, so this is going to be our final question. You've been sitting on a magical rocking chair, and it grants you 3 wishes. You can wish for anything and everything, but you have to say it out loud for it to come true. These are the rule of the rocking chair.
Nice. Wow.
So what are your 3 wishes?
I just have one, I think. Do I have to have 3?
No. One is good.
I think just keeping with my effort, keeping good health, because mm-hmm. that's something that is not completely up to me, because everything, I like to get into all kinds of trouble if they're exciting enough, but health is something that every time I get a cold, even I keep myself very healthy, but it distracts me. It doesn't mm-hmm. let me focus in what I love. So that's the only thing I will ask for. And then everything else I can figure it out. And I actually, so that'll be it.
That's good.
It's true, because if you can't be creative in that kind of sense that you're used to, right? When you're impaired, physically impaired, that's really...
Yeah. her in the physical, mental mindset. So that's a good one.
Everything else is up to you to decide. You know, the mind is what you can control.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what circumstances you are. You can enjoy it at whatever level, if you have a good will.
Yeah.
But the health, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. You can try, but.
Well, I'm excited that you stopped by to see us, and we had a great time. Thank you for.
Oh my God, thank you. This is so much fun.
We had to schedule you while you were in Italy, but I'm really excited. We had Karen, now we have you. Maybe we'll have one of your students. Like, that would be phenomenal. Thank you, Maria. And thank you to all of our listeners, and we'll catch up with you next week.
We're going to be back next Monday with a new rocking chair session. Bye, guys.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.